The future of Windows will show up in May, and Xbox has a dashboard update. Boom, my friends. Somehow another week has gone by. I turn around, it's Friday, which means it's time to record things, or it's really late Thursday evenings or when I'm really recording these things these days. And I don't know if the podcast makes time fly by or whatever it is. Whatever. April's happening, April's coming, and hopefully you had a wonderful week. Hopefully you had a good week. It's been very rainy on this side of the microphone. But let's dive into the news because, hey, we got the build session catalog, which realistically means here in roughly May 21st. I say roughly because build kicks off, I believe, May 21st, but it stretches a couple days. It stretches a couple days. However, there's a lot of sessions in here. And really, if you kind of read through the sessions and kind of understand, hey, what's going on? And this is going to shock everybody listening to this podcast when I tell you what's going to be the focus, when I tell you it's going to be AI and ARM stuff, like crazy, right? However, there are some interesting sessions in there, but the one that I'm most interested in, we can't watch, because if you're on the video side, you'll see it up on the screen, but there's one called Designing for a Brand New Windows AI Feature. And it is in person only, and it will not be recorded, which means I think you have to pay $1,800 to go to build, something crazy like that, if you want to see this session. Now, there's obviously other sessions that will be available. Things that we'll talk about, the next generation of Windows on ARM is one area. And so I think we're going to see a lot of, right, we know the Qualcomm Elite chip is coming. We know that Windows ARM is getting a big thing here in June. And we also know Copilot and AI and all that other stuff. But again, shocking news, Windows on ARM is going to be the big feature focus on the Windows side along with AI. Everything starts with an A. You got AI, right? Okay, that's maybe not whatever the best segment. But that's realistically what we're going to see it built. Now, there's obviously going to be things like Azure and all the other, and I don't want to say boring things, but things that pay the big bills for Microsoft will obviously be talked about at build. But yeah, so look forward to May 21st, and there's rumored, if you will, a Surface event, which we will get the next generation Surface Pro, and we'll see these Surface devices with the Elite chips arriving, or at least being talked about, I should say, and announced prior to build, which will help make sense out of a lot of these sessions, at least I would tend to think so. So, other things happening. The PC market has grown. The national nightmare is over, according to IDC. They said it only grew 1.5%. Now, there needs to be some asterisk like on this number, because first off, 1.5% is roughly flat, but technically it's a growth. However, the prior 2 years had been declined. So, like, you know, if you decline a whole bunch, you eventually will grow, but it's just not back to where things were. Still, nearly 60 million units shipped in Q1. That's a big amount of shipments. That's a lot of devices. That's why the PC industry is there and exists, because, hey, if you're shipping nearly 60 million of anything, that's a lot of devices going out the door. And mind you, those should all, I don't think you can buy a Windows 10 device. Yeah, it's end of life next year. So those are all Windows 11 devices. So keep that in mind. Just sort of keep that in mind. Other things that are happening in the world of Windows, because Microsoft is, you know, speaking of Windows 11 and growing that market share, if you have Windows 10, you might be seeing this full screen ad coming to a device near you. Microsoft has started pushing these, hey, look, Windows 10, end of life, upgrade to Windows 11, which is really great unless your device doesn't support Windows 11. And then I don't know what you do. You just kind of sit there and twiddle your thumbs. And maybe the IDC is expecting that this is going to help grow shipments, because look, if Microsoft is saying your device is no longer supported and you can't run Windows 11 and Windows 10 is out of date, what are you supposed to do? Well, you could sail the high seas, or you could go buy a new device. And I think the PC makers are really hoping you choose that second option. And so does Microsoft, candidly, at the end of the day. So there's also something else I want to talk about here. So this has been popping up everywhere, and I'm not trying to downplay Windows here and Surface for that matter, but we've been hearing a lot about these new Elite chips. We've been hearing a lot about them and how they are fantastic. And Microsoft, according to an internal memo, is said to be very confident that they are going to be able to compete with the MacBook M3's chips. This is great. They're going to potentially be doing some demos at this Surface event in May, showing how the Snapdragon Elite chip is going punch for punch, or at least potentially even beating the M3, which honestly I hope is all true. And I hope the Surface Snapdragon chip is just magical in every way, shape, or form. However, I want to just throw up on the screen here. You can see that Microsoft has been chasing this narrative for a very long time. Since 2014, it says, this is a headline from The Verge. It says, can the Surface Pro 3... steal the MacBook Air's crown? Microsoft has been chasing that headline for a literal decade at this point. Actually, I think longer than that. And so the point here is, I'm not trying to beat up on what the ARM is and the expectations and how Microsoft is going to present it, but you got to keep in mind that Microsoft is playing a different game here. If you want like a single linear, very controlled experience, you will have probably a better experience on the Mac. That's because they own the whole stack and the OS. However, the minute you want to do something that deviates from the path that Apple has outlined, you're screwed. And so the benefit of Windows is that it works with hardware across the universe. It's backwards compatible. You can tinker, you can do stuff. It's why I love it so much. However, if you're chasing a raw performance characteristic, you're gonna have a bad time on the Windows side when you compare it directly to Mac. First off, they're two completely different architectures. I think a better comparison that Microsoft should do, but they will never do it, is like compare it to like a flavor of Linux at the end of the day. Throw something on there that's also designed to work on every piece of hardware under the sun and then see how it performs. And I bet you that Microsoft probably comes out ahead in just about all cases. Not every scenario, where Linux workloads, especially in the server environment, a little bit different character there. But Microsoft likes to chase Apple, and I get it. I understand why. It's because, hey, they have the premium experience, right? They are really their only other competitor at the end of the day, but they're not really competing on the same playing field, because Windows is I don't need to explain Windows, especially to this audience. But anyways, they're going to continue to chase the MacBook Air, and it's going to continue to do whatever. And it's not the greatest analogy for Microsoft to take. They're going to go up there and say, haha, our chips are faster than Apple's. And they're not even Microsoft's, they're Qualcomm's, which is great for Qualcomm, I guess. But like, what's the net result of this? Net result is like, can I run iMessage on Windows PC? Nope, then I'd buy a Mac for that. But if you're on a Mac and you're like, can I upgrade my RAM? And you're like, nope, I gotta go buy a PC. Like, both platforms are serving a different market and a different audience. And when you go up there, I think going up there and trying to do benchmarks against a competitor who's playing on a different field just gives you an odd experience at the end of the day, because the net result is, if you only care about performance, Mac might actually be better because it's such a linear thing. But the second you care about that performance, like to play a game, you're right back on Windows, because Windows is the better platform for most people, except for those people who just want to open up a web browser at the end of the day. I don't know. I definitely don't want this ever to come across that I don't like Windows. I literally work for a company. We build Windows customization apps, and I do not have a, I don't think I have a Mac in the house. I used to at one point, but I don't anymore. Anyways, that's sort of that. It's just sort of funny when I hear these things like, you're going to topple the MacBook Air. It's like, guys, you've been chasing that dream for a long time. Let's move on to a different dream or something that's more, you know, a little more beneficial. And well, the hilarious part of that is like, really, who were they going to topple with these Snapdragon chips? It's going to be Intel. Let's be kind of real here. It's not Apple. If somebody wants a MacBook, they're going to buy it. I'm sure there's somebody out there, but there's very few people out there who are going like saying, I've got a MacBook and I've got a Qualcomm Elite chip device thing, whatever they're calling it. No, that cross shopper doesn't exist. The cross shopper that does exist is the one who's sitting there with like an HP Elite Dragonfly or a Lenovo device running these ARM chips. Like, those are the real scenarios, and Microsoft's not going to go up there and slander Intel, which is probably why they're going after Apple, because they're the only one they can that they're not really like partnered with on a hardware perspective. So maybe I just solved my own riddle inside my own feeble little brain. So there you go. On to the gaming news of the week. Fallout 4 is getting a free upgrade for current gen consoles on April 25th, timing in very nicely with the new Fallout series that I believe it's on Amazon, I think. I have not watched it yet. Maybe on the weekend. Time is a little bit limited for TV shows, and so I don't watch a lot of TV, but we will see. Speaking of things that are coming to your Xbox, not just a free upgrade, the Xbox April update is now rolling out. There's a couple new things in here. So there's these new sub-menu navigation options for the Xbox app on PC. Those are starting to roll out, so you may not have that, but they will get to you eventually. There's Discord voice options. You can open the guide and go to options and then mute the soundboard. If you know what that means, you will know exactly why that is important. And also, game hubs are now available to all PC players out there. Also on the Xbox side, they're testing some. I should say testing. It's on an insider test. So yes, technically they're testing. Good job, Brad. They are testing an update for cloud gaming, which is honestly just refreshing to hear because cloud gaming like came in with this super high punch and then it just kind of like fizzled out. And so there's a new user interface that allows you to send messages, view user profiles, view notification, the toast notifications, achievements, friends, and a lot more. So that is rolling out, or I should say, being trialed with some insiders and will eventually roll out to more people, which again is just good news because at the end of the day, it's nice to see cloud gaming get just a little bit of love because it has been a minute or two. So, all right, on to my favorite part of the week. Khadgart kicking off the questions with a paragraph. He says, congrats. Oh, I forgot. So I was on Unlocked this week over on IGN. I sat on their panel. You can go watch that podcast. And it's also on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform or whatever. So I sat on there and it went well. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, so Khadgart says, congrats on being unlocked. So he says, so first, I agree with you that Xbox, a lot of it was all Xbox talk. I agree with you that I don't think Xbox needs to make their own handheld. So for people who haven't watched it, sort of the nutshell of a lot of what we were digging into is like, I don't believe that Microsoft needs to build a handheld. I believe that Microsoft needs to improve the software experience, which is something they are very good at doing. Leave the hardware to the guys that do it and gals that do it very well at Lenovo, at Asus. Let those guys build the handhelds. Microsoft should build the software and make it work a lot better. And that should be the experience where Microsoft is living within that handheld space. Because I chuckle at Phil Spencer walking into the senior leadership room when they're doing, I'm assuming weekly or monthly, whatever stand-up meetings, and saying, guys, I need a billion. I need another billion to go build a Xbox handheld. This will be the time. And like, you can just see in the corner, the gravestones of like the Windows Phone and like the Surface Duo and the Zune and the Band and all these other mobile initiatives that have just completely exploded in their face. And Microsoft just lost literal tens of billions of dollars. He agreed with me that, yeah, we just got to get it software right. But he says, if Xbox were to create a handheld gaming device, do you think it would be successful if it had the power of an Xbox Series S, but functioned more like a Nintendo Switch, allowing both mobile and docked play? Or do you believe the Series S lacks the necessary power for such hardware investment? Here's my problem. It's not hardware that's holding back the Xbox platform. Like, I did a poll on Twitter. I don't know if I have the image here linked anywhere. Nope, maybe I don't. I think I overwrote it. So I'll drop it in where you see it. I was trying to, thought I still had it wired up. But when you listen to this or watch it, it'll already be there. So that'll make more sense. I did a poll. I was like, if you had $100 million to, and you were leading Xbox, you had $100 million to make an investment, would you add 10 more games to Game Pass? Would you build a Series X Pro? Would you do an Elite Series? And handedly, one is that more people want more games in Game Pass. So to that point, I don't think Microsoft building hardware is the missing component. I think the hardware exists. People just want games. That's all they want. It's like, stop giving us everything else. Just give us good games. And so it's like, don't give us a Series X Pro. Give us games. Don't give us a handheld. Just give us games. That is what people want. And so I think Microsoft, I don't want to say they would be unsuccessful, but I do struggle to think that they're not, if they think they're going to put this thing out there and have like a Nintendo Switch style success, I think that is completely not accurate to how it would actually be. They would sell a handheld, in my opinion, to some subset of their gaming audience, a fractional percentage or some sort of percentage, I shouldn't say fractional, would buy this device. But the question becomes, would they attract new people who do not own an Xbox to the ecosystem? If the answer to that in your head is no, they should never build this. Let somebody else do that. If you think the answer is yes, like this is going to attract tens of millions of people because they have a handheld device now, they're going to join, then maybe it's a little bit more justifiable. But that's a much harder argument to make at the end of the day. And then he says, this is all from Khadgart, he says, random question, only because you brought it up on Unlocked yesterday, you said you play AoE 2 a lot. Yes, I still play Age of Empires 2 at least a couple times a week, sometimes more, it just depends how long the match takes. I almost always play the computer, by the way. I'm trying to beat the computer 1v1 on very hard, and it is very difficult, which is a good challenge for me. So he says, out of curiosity, did you ever play Heroes of Might or Magic 3? I did not play either. He said, those are two games I play on Steam Deck all the time when traveling. Sydney2K says, hello, this is a follow-up question, oh great, from last week about passwords and authenticator. The question is, would you allow your banking card details to be stored in a password manager, such as 1Pass or an authenticator, or be it Microsoft or Google? So, without exposing my own security profile too much, I will not tell you exactly what I do with my banking details, but at the end of the day, it is up to you to decide if these platforms are secure enough to store that information. I do think, and there's probably somebody more qualified to answer this than me, that apps like 1Password, and 1Password is what I know well, are secure enough that yes, you can store that information in there if you are comfortable with that information being stored in there. At the end of the day, complex passwords and two-factor authentication are going to be your best line of defense against anything. I'm sure 1Password has a very robust security profile and everything is stored and encrypted and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, the weakest link by far, doesn't matter your password, doesn't matter your bank or anything else, will be you and getting socially engineered. So just keep that in mind, that even though you store all the stuff and do this great things, the weakest link will be somebody spoofing as your bank, calling you or Amex or whoever, trying to get your details. So just got to keep that in the back of your mind. At the end of the day, I believe storing something in a password manager is better than a browser. So I will just leave it at that. Rafik says, congrats on your appearance on IGN. When Microsoft talked about gaming preservation and forward compatibility, do you think they will present a new concept of retrocompatibility? Maybe, for example, digital preservation using an NFT system? No, I don't think they'll go that route. Do you think they will present an all-new system for gaming I don't. So here's my thoughts on it. Here's where this conversation was steered to. So there was the letter, I think it was from Sarah Bond, talking about game preservation. So this kind of got soaked up around the internet. I think Jez Corden deserves some credit for the scoop on this. I think it was him. If it wasn't him, I apologize to whoever got it. Does not matter. Talking about game preservation. And now, I got to be honest, it's a really weird time to start talking about game preservation, because we're like in the middle of a gen cycle at the end of the day, right? We're not, Xbox Series X and S have been out for a while. So what game preservation? What is going on here? Here's what I think's happening. So we're also like this all forward ahead on new hardware initiative. Here's my gut take on this. I think they are preparing to launch for a new generation of consoles, and they have to make some changes, right? They had to do this with every time, right? Somebody has to go back in and do backwards compatibility to bring stuff forward. And so how do you do that for the next generation? Well, why would they have to do that for the next generation, Brad? Isn't it supposed to just be like this one cohesive site? No, right? Remember, we have things coming online that we've never seen before. We have these NPUs, right? That's a new piece of hardware with these large language models. My guess here is that they're spinning up their new hardware division, or the division's already working, and they need these games to be compatible going forward. How do you do that? You create a game preservation group who is solely in charge of bringing titles forward. So you can imagine, like, I'm making things up here, but you'll understand the analogy here. So this group is going to go to Halo and say, like, okay, we're going to figure out how to do this. Because remember, they're starting on a roughly equal playing field, because all of the games that now work on Series X, whatever they need to move to the Xbox Series V next is probably the same thing for every title. So you have one group who knows how to do this, and they go from title to title to title to title and do all that. However, Activision has a massive back catalog as well. And so that same group will know how to pull things forward into the new generation. And that, to me, is a long-winded answer to the game preservation. I think this is tied to their next generation initiatives and making sure that these titles are easily upgradable to be run for the next generation of hardware and potentially cloud services and all that too. I think you can tie all that in at the end of the day. So Mr. PKI with a double dose of questions this week. Actually, a couple questions. He says, have you checked out the Fallout TV show? I have not yet. I know it's out there, but I have not. Any reviews or ratings to share? It seems like people are really liking this one. It seems like it's being better received than the Halo TV series. And he says, on that note, have you seen the latest Borderlands movie? No. If anybody hasn't picked it up by now, I don't watch a lot of TV. I like to watch football. I will watch the Masters Golf Tournament this weekend. I will watch whatever my wife wants me to watch whenever we're watching shows together. But I don't watch a lot of TVs. TVs, as in plural. I watch a lot of TV. So The Joe Finn says, with Build 2024 session list going live, are there any sessions which seem to particularly interest to you? And what do you think is missing? What do you think? Ooh, missing. As I noted, this session, the designing a brand new Windows AI feature, is of interest to me. I mean, right, we've heard rumors of this AI Explorer stuff. I think a lot of these sessions, is there sessions missing? Well, like UWP, those things, but we already know what's going on there. That's not it. To me, I think it's really like, what are these new AI initiatives? And Microsoft is not going to spill the beans, if you will, on that until whenever. Probably until... So historically, how they had done it, they'd always have these session lists titled like, whatever, untitled event to be revealed after keynote. And so I bet there's some like that, that on the 21st after the keynote, these session titles will go online and they'll be talking about the new features. Realistically, it's just nice to see Windows back in the headlines. We went through literal years, many, many years of Windows just being this thing that was just swept under the rug and nobody really cared about. And the fact that there's like big sessions, Windows AI features, like to me, that makes Build more exciting. And Mr. PKI dropping the last question of the week. He says, hi, Brad, have you noticed how hard it is to change the default browser anymore? So there was an update that went out. What Mr. PKI is referring to is there was an update that went out. Was it part of Patch Tuesday, I believe? And it started blocking some popular scripts that were used in the IT admin space, I believe. That would allow you to pretty much like at bulk or during install, change default behaviors for browsers. And so what it feels and kind of sounds like was when Microsoft was pushing out the update that brought them into compliance with the new EU regulations, like that feature stopped working. So there's two ways to interpret this. There's two ways you can start interpreting this. One is Microsoft trying to make it harder to change the default browser just because, hey, they want everybody to use an Edge. However, it should be pointed out that you can still very easily go in and change your default browser from a GUI, from a GUI perspective. The user can go do that without issue. It seems like it's being framed a little bit. They're doing this to stop potentially malicious apps from going in and changing default app behavior. You know, growing market share in the name of security is a classic maneuver. It's like, we're not trying to make it harder. We're not doing things that are whatever, but we're doing this to protect you. You can still change it if you want. But like if you've worked with a large deployment before, you know, changing things at scale and across the entire fleet is the way to do it. And if you take away some of the scripting that allowed that to easily happen, it's like, you know, was that for security or to stop them, the enterprises from deploying Chrome using some scripting and other things? And so... yeah. So you'll see headlines, as Mr. PKI points out, blocks changing default web browsers. Well, kind of like everything else in the world of all of this stuff. It's gray. Was it? It's gray. We'll see what happens. If Microsoft undoes what they did, then we'll know maybe it was a bug. Windows is known to have bugs, too. So there you go. There you guys go. That wraps it up. I'll be curious to see. Somebody rang the doorbell while I was doing this. My dog started hooting and hollering, as a good protecting dog would, although my dog is not really one to protect the house. And I'll see if that made it into this. If it does, it'll be obvious. If it's not, you'll know why, or you won't know why. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying, guys. Hopefully you just had a wonderful week. As always, make sure to keep it subscribed here, because the only BS on this podcast is me.